Okay, this is John 11, 1 to 45. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi, they said, "a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I'm glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." On his arrival, Jesus found Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God who has come into the world." After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days." Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him.
I did ask for verse 45 to be included. So in your NIV translation, if that's what you've got of the Bible there, it will have a new subsection. But you'll notice that the whole story is complete in the belief of the onlookers. The whole thing is actually all about belief. But let's come to a couple of introductory comments, first of which is, hi, my name's Tom, nice to meet you. I've been at this church just this year. I'm married to Bree, and we've got a little three-month Ava. We haunt up the back there, little parents club forming with a couple of prams. So I'm in a joyful stage of life, looking forward to spending the next 20, 25 minutes with you. Second introductory comment would be to say that this is a really heavy passage. It deals with themes of life, death, grief, family members, and I cannot begin to imagine the cumulative pain that we as a room bring to these kind of topics. I wouldn't dare to try and put myself into your shoes. I can't imagine the pain that's happened to you. What I can do today is point you to Jesus, who I think has a lot to say into every one of our lives and into all of our individual suffering circumstances. Third thing to say is that, in fact, yes, we can get a slide up for this. The back end of John gives us the whole purpose of the book itself. So when we're asking, why did John record this account of Lazarus? Why did he write it down? He actually tells us the answers. He says, these are written so that you may, keyword, believe that Jesus is the Messiah, Son of God, and that by believing you may, keyword, have life in his name. And this whole thing is recorded so that we would believe. And that explains why, strangely, so many of the details are left out. Most of this chapter is just dialogue around and before the actual primary thing that we're most excited about, which is the fact that he raised a guy from the dead. That is crazy. That is abnormal. And we would naturally want all of the details about what did that look like? What was it? Give it, you know, if the reporter showed up in that moment, they wouldn't be so interested in the pre-chats. They'd be interested in the resurrection itself. But John records it differently. And John records it so that you and I would be able to believe on the basis of this account. Third introductory comment before we get stuck into a particularly thorny question is this quote that's going to come up on the screen by an author, Rebecca McLaughlin. Wasn't always a Christian, became a Christian, and has done a lot of wrestling with the issues in John chapter 11. She says this, from a biblical perspective, we must also reject the idea that if God loves us, he cannot intend for us to suffer. This premise crumbles on every scriptural page. Time and again, we see those who are chosen and beloved by God suffering. Second slide. Indeed, our beliefs about God and suffering expose the fault lines between our natural assumptions and the biblical narrative. To say it in other words, the way we often think about God and our suffering isn't necessarily the way that God would have us think about it. I would go so far as to say that most of us assume that if God really loved us, then he would run to prevent anything painful happening in our lives. But Rebecca's pointing out that John 11 is a pretty great example of where that assumption gets thrown into the air a little bit and reconsidered from some different angles. And so I'm aware that today we might need to do some reconsidering of the way that we think about God and suffering. And in all of that, I would say, is a very heavy topic. And we'll try and do that with sensitivity and empathy, because I cannot imagine some of the stuff that even right now you might be going through in your world. So with all of that said, I've really only got two things I'd like to say today. The first one is that Jesus cares about your suffering more than you think. And the second one is that he's doing more than you think. But before we get there, can I give you one particularly thorny issue that takes us right to the heart of everything that's going on? We can get verse 1 up on the screen. If you've got a Bible, you'd like to follow along. Verse 1 is where we're going to start. It says, now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Verse 2, this Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. Verse 3, so the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. Now you can see the natural assumption that they are bringing to bear here, can't you? We've got a little picture to try and demonstrate it. They're thinking that out of love, Jesus is going to leave where he is ASAP, and come to Lazarus, they're hoping that he'll do a healing miracle. Earlier in the book of John, Jesus has done healing, and they're thinking Jesus might be able to heal Lazarus. They're thinking that love means running to prevent any suffering. And I think a lot of us naturally assume the same thing. We find ourselves right in the middle of this story. Verse 4, when he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. Now, it does take a pit stop through death, but it doesn't end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Now, that's a strange thing to say about somebody dying, that God would be glorified through it. What he does not mean is that there is anything glorious about death. Death in the biblical narrative is an abomination. Death was never the plan. Death is not a part of this creation. Death is not glorious. It is deeply inglorious. What he does mean, remembering that the whole thing is about belief and coming to belief, is that he's going to use this inglorious moment to demonstrate his glory. He's going to use it to do a miracle. He's going to use it, as inglorious as it is, to achieve something greater. That's what he's saying in verse 4. Verse 5 and 6 is where the thorny issue comes up. See if you can see what's wrong about this statement from Jesus. Verse 5, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. All three of them. There's none of them that he doesn't love. So, other translations, therefore, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. That's a non sequitur. It doesn't make sense. That is not what we thought would happen. It should read, he loved them, therefore he went as soon as possible. Like if somebody walked down the middle today and came up to me and said, hey, urgent message, someone you love is, I would consider like stopping this sermon and leaving to go to the deathbed of the person. And Jesus does exactly the opposite of what I would do. And so we've got a picture up on the screen to demonstrate the difference. They were expecting that out of love, Jesus would leave to prevent the suffering. But what he does is out of love, he chooses to stay put exactly where he was, do nothing for 2 days. How can that be? Are you with me on that being a particularly thorny issue? And it connects to our lives as well. You say, why did Jesus not stop what happened in my life? Why did Jesus not prevent what is going wrong currently in my family? To get our heads around that, well, before we do that, we can actually resonate it, can't we, with verse 21, which will come up on the screen. Because Martha says the same thing. She comes to Jesus when he finally does get there, and she says, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. I'm not sure whether she was angry or confused or sad. You can feel the mixture of all of the things that she must have been. That's our question too, isn't it? Jesus, if you'd been there and if you'd been here in my life, these things would not have happened. Now, part of the explanation of what's going on here comes in a place that you would not expect it at all. It comes in verse 39, which is the verse that talks about the stinky tomb and the 4 days that Lazarus has been in there. Piece of background knowledge that unlocks quite a lot is that at that time, in that day, in that place, they had a presupposition, they had a superstition that when somebody died, the soul or the life force of the person didn't depart straight away. It stuck around for maybe 1, 2, maximum 3 days. And they would permit the possibility that maybe, possibly, every now and then, somebody might come alive again within the first 3 days, even after they seemed to have died. We have a similar thing, kind of, in our scientific age today. We permit the idea that somebody's heart could stop and then it could be restarted. We would usually give that a number of minutes rather than days, but that's what they were thinking at that time. And so Jesus waits the minimum amount of time possible that he can show up and for the guy to be incontrovertibly dead. He gets all the way to the stage where the guy actually stinks, like his soul is not hanging around his body anymore. This guy is as dead can be. Because remember, we can get the purpose statement back up on the screen. This is what John is writing for. As much as we're interested in the fact that Jesus raised the guy from the dead, John is interested in helping us to believe a certain set of truths about Jesus. That is what the whole thing is driving at. So if we push forward to verse 15, for example, you actually see Jesus giving the same sense. He says, "For your sake, I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe." Jesus delayed his approach so that when he did raise the guy from the dead, there could be no doubt that that had happened. What's Jesus trying to prove about himself? What does he want you to believe? Verse 25 coming up on the screen. He wants us to believe this claim about himself, that I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. How do you prove that? What you do is you take a guy who's definitely dead and you raise him again in front of everyone so that they can see it. And I would say that if you are in this room today and Christianity has not become yours yet, Jesus is not yet your Lord, and church is maybe not your normal place to be on a Sunday morning, so glad you're here. This is what's on offer. The offer of Christianity is not necessarily that your life right now will get a lot better. It's not even that your suffering in this life will necessarily cease, as much as we would love that. It is that even though you die, that eternally and spiritually you can live. That is the offer for you today. If you are somebody who's been in church for a little while, this still rubs us a little bit the wrong way, doesn't it? Because it does seem like even in the middle of deep grief and deep suffering, what is Jesus prioritizing here? Jesus is on about belief. 2023 Sydney Mindset often says, oh, belief is a small part. It's just a bonus add-on to your existence. What you believe, a bunch of check boxes. It's not super important what you believe. To Jesus, belief is everything. And he let Lazarus die so that you and I could come to believe that Jesus truly is the resurrection and the life. And if we stopped right there, Jesus might seem like a little bit of a jerk. And we might say, I don't want to follow that guy. What I'd love to show you at this point is that he cares about your suffering way more than you think. Two things I'm trying to show you today. Number one, he cares more than you think. Number two, he's doing more than you think. If you've got a Bible, let's pick it up in verse 32. Verse 32, because he cares about your suffering so much more than you think. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Same thing that her sister said before. Verse 33, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who'd come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Now that's fascinating because Jesus knows exactly what he's about to do. He knows this will not end in death, but for the glory of God. And yet he is still deeply moved and troubled. Jesus is thrown by our suffering. Jesus has so much compassion for this crying woman in front of him. Verse 34, he says, where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Verse 35, shortest verse in the English translation of the Bible, Jesus wept. If you've never memorized a Bible verse before, start here. Jesus wept. Let me try and say that another way. That when Jesus, who has power over death and knows he's about to raise this guy again from the dead, simply sees the distress of the people in front of him, he weeps. Jesus gets what it is to be us. He was one of us. To say it another way, the God of the universe is moved to tears by our suffering. He cares way more than you think. Verse 36. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." They get it. But verse 37 is still our niggling question. It says, some of them said, "Could not he have opened the eyes of the blind man, have kept this man from dying?" You know, it's great that he cares. That's lovely. Is he going to do something about it? Does he have any power? I can get someone else to weep with me. I want someone who's actually going to do something about my suffering. So first thing I wanted to show you today is that Jesus cares more than you think. Second thing is actually that he's doing more than you think about the suffering in the world. Can I show you from verse 41? This is what he does immediately. So they took away the stone. Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you've heard me." Verse 42, "I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may what? Believe that you sent me." Verse 43, then he said, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave cloths and let him go." So verse 45 is the end result of the whole thing. Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and seen what Jesus did believed in him. So I said, Jesus is doing more about our suffering than we think he is. Right here, what's happened is that he's raised the guy again from the dead. He got involved in the most obvious way he could. But that's not much use to us because, firstly, Lazarus is not still alive today. Lazarus must have died again. The whole point was not raising Lazarus from the dead. It was showing that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. And what help is that to us to have one guy walking around from the dead? Where it lands for us, actually, there's a hint in verse 44 with all of the talk of the linen and the cloths and the grave clothes that actually point forward and mirror the second resurrection that happens in the book of John right towards the end. We've got it coming up in chapter 20. This is Jesus' own resurrection, and look at the similarities here. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. It's almost like Jesus was in control of the whole thing. Let me try and show it to you in pictures. Out of love, Jesus really did leave where he was. But it wasn't just to go and help Lazarus straight away. He left heaven to come to earth. The place where he went to solve our problem was the cross, where he engaged with death, the great enemy of all people. And actually, he put his own body on the line, going through sickness and death and suffering. Ultimately raised again to show that it all worked, and glorified so that God's Son would be glorified. But the problem for us is that we live between the cross and the second coming of Jesus. And so we don't experience this fully just yet. There was a breaking in of the light. But the whole process has not wrapped up just yet. Where's Jesus right now? He's at the right hand of the Father. And one day he will come back to judge the living and the dead. And that is the moment when his conquering of death will actually become so real to us in its fullness, not just glimpses like the resurrection of Lazarus. This is what Jesus is doing about our suffering. And we have to do away with the idea that Jesus came to eliminate all suffering on earth right now. Because this is not yet the new heavens. This is not yet the new creation. We live waiting for that final day. And as much as it hurts right now, and I cannot imagine the hurt that some of us in this room are going through even this morning, when we put it all into the true perspective and recognize that that final day is coming but is not here just yet, It helps us to have accurate expectations of the Christian life. So many people leave the faith because they thought Jesus was going to make all my suffering go away. He didn't, so I'm out. The truth of the matter is, Jesus is doing way more than you think about your suffering. And yet, he is still waiting for more people to be saved first before his return. And that is the moment that all of our suffering, all of our pain, all of our hardship, and all of our tears will finally come to an end. Let me try and say it for you as we close in the words of a famous author, Dostoevsky. He says, "I believe like a child that suffering will be healed and made up for, that all the humiliating absurdity of human contradictions will vanish like a pitiful mirage, that in the world's finale, at the moment of eternal harmony, something so precious will come to pass that it will suffice for all hearts, for the comforting of all resentments, that it will make not only possible to forgive, but to justify all that has happened." In the words of the Bible, Revelation 21:4, "He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away." That day is coming. And Jesus cares about our suffering so much more than we think, and he's doing so much more than we think. Let me pray. God, we love you and we trust you, and we ask that you would help us to trust you in the midst of our pain and in the midst of our suffering. God, we praise you for what you did on the cross, rising again. God, we ask for great perspective on where we sit, waiting for your return, but having already seen your light break in. I ask that you would give a measure of comfort and encouragement to us who need it today. God, thank you that you care about us so much more than we think. Amen.